Pop yourself a beer or a cold libation. Let me tell you how I wrote this little theme. I went and took a call from Brother Jason, and he tells me that he has a little dream. He says he needs a backwards intro to begin his podcast, and I ask him, what you got? He said, I'll start off with some talking and some moody clips of popcorn fighting, fantasy explorations and some groundless exploitation. Kickstarts that I'm watching and some blind unboxings, full month horror movie marathon. Sometimes I let the dogs go on contests and of course you know it's all about games. I said, slow down, let's just start with the name. It's the Nerds RPG Variety Podcast. With the other Jason.
Welcome back to Nerds RPG Variety Cast. I'm your host, Jason. Today is the award show for our Fish Out of Water or Duck Out of Water contest, where you called in and let us know your favorite media where the hero is totally out of place and out of their element. I've got a bunch of great entries, so let's get right into it. And then after the entries, we'll randomly pick some winners.
Hey, yo, Jason. So calling in about your September contest, the fish out of water story, favorite one. And, I won't say The Crow, even though it is the best fish out of water story. Dead Man Comes Back Among the Living. So I will go with I'll go with my second favorite fish out of water story. And I'll go with the original 1980s Flash Gordon movie. That movie absolutely rules. I love it. It's a consummate fish out of water story. Flash, one of the most handsome leading men in all time, gets transported to an alien world and becomes king of the universe. And it's amazing, dude. The soundtrack is amazing. That movie rules. And yeah, man, I'm curious because you talked about how you have a whole lot of examples, and I don't. So, you know, I've read some stuff that I was like, yeah, I don't really like this, but yeah, man, Flash Gordon, dude, all day, every day. Peace out.
Hey, Jason, Daniel Bennis keep calling in about the September contest. Very, very cool idea and concept. And as you said, there are tons of properties. I just heard the first announcement for System Sunday, and I'm just immediately going to call in. Normally, I dwell on these, and I think, well, which one do I really like? Do I like this one better than that one? And I'm just going to go with one, the first one that popped in my head. The first one I think of, and it's kind of obscure, or maybe often not thought of as this, but it is, which would be Witch World. Witch World by Andre Norton is a series of books. And in the first one, actually, interestingly enough, I mean, this mild spoiler. In the first one, the man is, it's a man that's I can't remember the character's name, but the man, he's a dude. He is brought, through from like our time or whatever, you know, the time the book was written, I guess the 70s, into this witch world, right? Where women are able to cast magical spells. And that becomes a point. That's why I bring up that it's just women. And he becomes a hero in that land and fights and becomes, you know, he starts a family and da da da. So it's like he kind of eventually adapts and becomes part of that world. But he starts off as an outsider. And through the series of books, of course, he becomes more into it. And then what's actually fun about it is in the later books, and again, this is probably if you just did a quick synopsis of the books, this is probably not too much of a spoiler. In the later books, their children, the man and the woman that he becomes, you know, married to, their children end up crossing into like kind of another area that was uncrossable by people of the witch world. So it's not really another dimension, but it kind of is. And they have adventures. And then from there, and I think it's the very last book, the daughter gets thrown into an even further dimension. So there's lots of this like dimensional hopping stuff going on and learning about how different cultures operate, and some of it's a little bit more sci-fi based, some of it's a little bit more fantasy based. It is really cool how it's all mixed together and includes things like spell casting and also a very strong, and I actually talked about this in a video on alignment languages, a very strong example of what I consider like alignment language, like where there was literally like statements and words people couldn't speak because they weren't of that
the darkness, I guess. So there was a lightness and a darkness. And they actually used words to, like, block people from areas and stuff. Like, you know, you can only pass here by space saying this magic word that opens the gate, but the magic word is a word of law. And if you're chaotic, you can't speak it, right? So, like, you literally can't get through. And I love stuff like that. And anyways, it's a really cool series. And they're you know, they're pulp novels from whatever they're from, the 60s, maybe a little earlier. And they are fast reads and really fun, and you can read any of them because I think Andre Norton does a really good job of, like, introducing each book with enough stuff that you, if it's a third book, you still kind of get what's going on. But I'd recommend starting with the first one, which I think is just called Witch World, but easy enough to Google it. That's my entry for this as far as portal jumping, time traveling, dimension shifting. We're going to say the novels by Andre Norton, Witch World.
Jason, it's Anthony calling in from the Everlasting Road. In response to your contest, we talked, when we were talking about the Morrow Project, about what I would like to put forward as a recommendation into the contest. That being Harlan Ellison's short story, Phoenix Without Ashes. In conjunction with the way that I first encountered the story, which was Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's 1970s fantastic, from a certain point of view, television adaptation called The Star Lost. And so how it fits your premise is that we have a set, or a singular, fish out of water character who then has to explore what, from his perspective originally, is a series of different worlds. And this is accomplished by virtue of the fact, no spoilers, but kind of spoilers, that he's an occupant of a generation ship, which has been launched out into space for some distant destination. And there are things that he will encounter when he gets out of his original cultural zone, which preserved his culture, and then has to interact at first with the ship as a ship. None of that makes any sense to him. And then moving on and exploring more of these different pockets of civilizations as he goes. So that's all I guess I really want to say about the product. You can get it as, you know, in book form. You can get it as a graphic novel. And you can get it on DVD as The Star Lost. Although I think I would strongly recommend people who have trouble with 1970s style cinematography and low budgets and that sort of thing, maybe want to sidestep The Star Lost. I can look at it through the eyes of nostalgia and remember being really, really young and watching it in reruns over and over and over again on the CBC. So that helps me get through it, but, you know, pacing, dialogue choices, costuming choices, budget limitations on set and set design, all of these things may make it nigh unwatchable for younger audiences. I don't know, but I still enjoy it. Anyway, Fish Out of Water Story, Phoenix Without Ashes by Harlan Ellison.
Hi, Jason. It's Michael, Chicago Wiz, and this is my entry for the Fish Out of Water, Duck Out of Water entry. Had a good think about this, and I'd have to say that from a personal experience, my favorite Fish Out of Water is a video game that came out, I want to say, 2016, 2017, by a Canadian publishing company whose name I can't remember because I'm sleep deprived. My brain's barely working today. But it's the game called The Long Dark. Now, The Long Dark is set up as a very intense survival game. I'm not going to use the word realistic because no computer game can be truly survival realistic or teach you survival skills. Please don't learn survival skills from computer games, because it's not gonna end well for you. But the one thing that The Long Dark does is it throws you in the middle of a situation where you're injured, you're in really bad elements, and something has happened to the entire population of the place that you're at, and you can't find anyone or anything. You have no idea what happened to your companion. You have no idea why things are the way they are. And all you know is you're freezing to death and you're injured. I know that sounds, what the heck is that? The reason it's fish out of water is it's not the protagonist that's the fish out of water. It's you as a player. You have to figure out how to survive. And this game is, I want to say, Oregon Trail brutal times 10 in how quickly it will kill you for the wrong mistake. Think you can take on wolves with your little branch? That's a mistake. Think you can go another, 30 minutes without water? That's a mistake. Think that there's going to be something over that ridge where he can be out of the elements? That's a mistake. Think he can make a fire? That's a mistake. I mean, this game is just intensely, intensely brutal. But it's also strangely zen-like. Once you get the hang of it, I don't feel like I ever lost truly the fish out of water feeling, because every time I got confident in the game, I would go to a new area and have to completely learn all over again. What's the rhythm here? What are the creatures here? Where are the resources here? And that sort of thing. But it really put me as the player into situations where I had no idea and I had to figure it out. And I'm not going to spoil the story and what happens and whatnot, but there is that element there where you're uncovering things, and that gives you this feeling of detachment and, what the heck, as well. So, yeah, that is my nomination. Personal, emotional experience. I played this game quite a bit. I ran a stretch of surviving, quote-unquote, 500 days, which probably took me about 3 weeks of play, somewhere around there. And I haven't played it since. I'm one of those people, when I play a game and I've kind of gotten my fill of it, I tend to put it down and move on to the next video game. But highly recommend it. And if you do play it, just be prepared to die. All right, that's it. Looking forward to hearing what other episode or what other thoughts people have on this topic. So, game on.
Jason, this is Dark Fluid. Just wanted to let you know my favorite fish out of the water and time travel character and story, and that would be Ash Williams, the Army of Darkness, the medieval dead. Definitely a fish out of water, and definitely a time traveler, so I don't know that I get bonus points for that, but by far my favorite. Funny, adventurous, exciting, overconfident, shop smart, shop S-mart.
I don't know, Jason, where are you playing at? I was all sat there, I've got my little notepad next to me, I was ready to send in my competition entry about time travel, and then you pulled the old switcheroo on me and changed it to talking about a fish out of water story. What are you trying to play at, mate? Nah, I'm just kidding, it's all good. But I'm going to send you my story anyway, because as I thought about it, I thought, well, it does involve time travel, but it's also a bit of a fish out of water story. So you can take it as a competition entry if it fits the bill. If not, feel free not to. It's absolutely fine. So way, way, way back when, I ran a game which was set in your pretty much standard fantasy world. There'd been a few problems with undead, a little bit more than usual, but nothing too ridiculous. And the player characters discovered that this was apparently all a result of, way back in the mists of time and the past of the game setting, a great necromancer had done a ritual where he was trying to sort of meld the planes of the dead and the planes of the living together. But he'd been stopped by a brave group of heroes, and only a little bit of the essence of the planes of the dead leaked through. So that's why it wasn't such a big problem. Much later on in the campaign, the player characters actually ended up going back in time, and they encountered said necromancer performing the ritual. Unfortunately, due to them sort of interfering, things went seriously wrong, and this time the ritual sort of went out of control and basically ripped a hole in the fabric of the two planes, just mashing them together like a giant with two toy blocks. Now, a few player characters died while they were in the past, and when they went back into the present, they found that the world had been changed. Some of the people who they'd known, like a paladin who'd been in the party and had died, was actually now a vampire, helping to lead a massive army of undead that had, as a result of this ritual tearing open the fabric of the planes, had all but taken over the campaign. And the free peoples of the world were now fighting a sort of valiant rearguard action, but there was little hope of a victory for them. However, it also allowed us, for some of the people who'd lost characters near to when they moved back into the future, we could effectively get them to play different versions of the characters they'd lost. So we had someone who played a sort of slightly savage barbarian, and then when they went into the future version, because they'd been thrown together in this sort of alternate timeline with all the other races, you know, all having a common enemy to fight against, they sort of absorbed more of their culture, and this version of the character was actually a bard. And it basically just allowed me to say, well, I'll take the same starting characteristics and sort of general vibe that you had for the first character, and then just feel free to tweak something and we'll justify it in this new alternate timeline background. I can't remember how the campaign ended, to be honest, because it was years and years ago. But like I say, the characters being fishes out of water back in the past and trying to adapt to the past and finding out it wasn't all that they thought it was from their mythology, and then realizing, oh shit, we've messed it up. And trying to correct things back in the future was one of the things that sticks in my mind even to this day. And I thoroughly enjoyed running the game for that group. So there you go. Take that as a contest entry or not. Either way, I hope you've enjoyed the story. Take care, dude, and I'll catch you soon.
Hey, Jason. I'm calling in for my entry for a Fish Out of Water contest. So my entry is Janissaries by Jerry Pournelle. And it was actually the inspiration for the birthday game that I did. Janissaries is a science fiction novel by American author Jerry Pournelle. It was published in 1979, and actually I have the copy, the version that is illustrated by comic artist Luis Bermejo. It's the first book, Pournelle's Janissaries series. There's other books, Clan and Crown, Storm of the Victory, and Mamelukes. I might have like the one that has all four of them in a single collection, or at least the first two in a single collection. So here's the premise. In Janissaries, the leader is a U.S. Army officer in the Cold War period, Captain Rick Galloway. He, along with his platoon-sized unit of soldiers, primarily from the U.S., are abducted from a CIA operation against Cubans in the fictional tropical African country of St. Marie, and they're abducted by a flying saucer. The beings abducting them present themselves as rescuers from a hopeless situation where Galloway's unit is about to be overrun in a night assault, and then they're, of course, going to be executed if they're captured. So then afterwards, the human soldiers have the option of serving the aliens in special situations involving a more primitive planet in which humans are living in medieval conditions. So like the machine guns and magic game that you talked about, the soldiers are expected to be able to use their superior weapons and tactics to conquer a part of the planet. So again, like the that was kind of my inspiration for doing the birthday game where you guys were fish out of water, really. But then I changed a little bit and made the aliens a bit more not as benevolent as one might think. So anyway, so the it's called Janissaries because of that sort of slave soldier deal that offered to the eponymous Janissaries of the Ottoman Empire. And so they go to this primitive planet. They're set down on this planet and joined by another person. And actually, so like once they take him off the planet and rescue him, they can never go back to Earth because there's this like, confederation that the Earth of which Earth is not a member that they take Earthlings from. I guess the aliens see something about Earthmen and Earthwomen that is, I don't know. Anyway, so right, so they have. They end up fighting people from different... It's weird. It's like they fight people from different eras. People from Roman times, from Septimus Severus' legion, people, longbowmen, pikemen, stuff like that. So, but they do eventually win the battle, and they have to put, I guess the aliens watching want, I don't know what their purpose is. I guess it's never really stated, but I guess they're supposed to do things for these aliens, like put people on the throne that might be more willing to accept the alien help, maybe. I don't know. There's some other nuances in the books as well, as some of the original group of his want to go their own way or become rogue or work for the other guys. Who knows what the rationale is. I honestly don't remember. I did, like I said, I have like a compilation book, so I probably will reread it and try to think about how to run a game set similarly in a world or verse like it. So anyway, thanks for the contest, and I'll talk to you later.
Hey, Jason, this is one of many Joes. Yep, I'm still doing it. It's funny. Trust me. Anyway, I wanted to call in about your duck out of water or fish out of water contest. I had several thoughts that came to mind all at once, but I knew what the answer had to be, but I thought it through, and you know me, I talk too much. So I'm going to give you everything that went through my head, but I'm going to save the real answer for last. So of course you said duck out of water. So the most obvious answer, and I think the one that you're going to hear a lot of, is Howard the Duck. And that's really all I have to say about it, because that sums everything up right there. But the second thing you said was fish out of water, and what dawned on my mind was almost a literal answer, and that was Splash with Daryl Hannah, because, you know, I was a teenage boy, and that was Daryl Hannah. I mean, come on. What else do I have to say? But of course, then we start going to my favorite things, right? Because you said, what's your favorite, right? And so, of course, the answer is going to have to be, not the final answer, but the answer is going to have to be Wrath of Khan, right? I mean, Wrath of Khan is all about the fish out of water, or the duck out of water, as you say, right? I mean, first of all, you have Kirk, who is that young adventurer out of that water and trapped in the old man's body, right? And you have Savik, who really has no water of her own, and she's trying to figure that out. And you have Peter Preston, actually he represents all the midshipmen aboard the Enterprise, you know, who are on a training voyage, now on an actual mission. They're all ducks out of water. And of course, David Marcus, who is a scientist who finds himself on the Enterprise confronted with this man who turns out to be his father. Oh, he is so much a fish out of water. And of course, the ultimate Khan, who is a two-dimensional fish in the three-dimensional water. I mean, come on. But that's not even my number one Star Trek pick, because in Star Trek, I would say the best fish out of water is the episode Mirror Mirror of Classic Trek, where Kirk, Scotty, and Uhura all find themselves in the mirror universe, you know, Spock with a beard and evil people abound everywhere. Uhura with a dagger. Awesome scene. Anyway, all right, very much fish out of water. But I knew when I started, it was my initial answer, and I came back to it in the end. My personal favorite fish out of water story is the 1937 Victor Fleming film, Captain's Courageous. This isn't Victor Fleming's most famous film. That's either going to be Gone with the Wind or The Wizard of Oz, but Captain's Courageous, when I list my top three movies, you know, that's top five movies, that's always on the list. And maybe because it deals with a Portuguese fisherman, and that's, you know, it's kind of in my heritage, and takes place off the coast of Gloucester, Mass, which, you know, that's where my Portuguese fisherman ancestors came from. But Freddie Bartholomew is the literal fish out of water. Spencer Tracy scoops him up out of the water, and throughout the rest of the movie calls him my little fishy. And this is the only movie in which Spencer Tracy ever won the Academy Award. So that's it. Freddie Bartholomew in Captain's Courageous, my favorite Fish Out of Water. Thanks for the contest. Thanks for all you do. Have a great one. Bye.
Hey there, Brother Jason. I was listening to the episode about machine guns and magic, and it occurs to me that there's a retro clone of that out there called OD Green that was run on the Occult Orifice Outrage podcast a while back as a solo play. So it's good to see the original getting some love. I will say that I'm going to win your contest right now. You don't really have to continue the Fish Out of Water story contest because I'm going to win it. There's only one answer to this question, and it's Big Trouble in Little China. Jack Burton is the ultimate fish out of water through the whole movie. I never realized this when I was, I was a young adult and a young kid, I was watching this movie and I loved the, we got ninjas and samurais and the three winds and all these things. I never realized, what was really going on, that this movie was sort of a send up of this sort of the sort of white hero, sort of movie, in that the American, the Westerner, and through the whole film is just a fish out of water the whole time. He's shooting his little machine gun in the air and rocks fall on his head. And there's these great scenes where, everyone takes care of all the bad guys and he's, he hardly gets in a punch, he does have his little moment at the end, but it's funny because he acts like the toughest guy in the movie for the entire movie. He's convinced he's not a fish out of water, but he absolutely is, so, yeah, that's all I wanted to say. You can end the contest now because this is the ultimate answer. Son of a bitch must pay, et cetera, et cetera. Goodbye.
If that call sounded familiar, it's because I played Nate's call on an episode of the show during the contest back in September. Now, Carl Rodriguez, who had already sent us an entry in, heard that call and sent in a response, possibly encouraged by my talking about Edgar Rice Burroughs. Let's hear what Carl has to say in response to Nate.
I disagree with that bad breath fellow. I think you can go even further to find a fish out of water, classic fish out of water, in a similar vein to Big Trouble in Little China. And that would be someone thrown even farther afield. John Carter of Mars by Edgar Rice Burroughs, right? He's an Earthman sent to Mars. And maybe even you could consider Tarzan sort of a fish out of water, right? Our orphan boy from an English family left in Africa, totally out of his element, even as he grows up and raised by apes. So maybe Edgar Rice Burroughs started that sort of trend, and this would win. For sure.
Hey, Jason, it's Sonny from Grog Talk. In regards to your fish out of water contest, my entry, which I don't think I will be the only person saying this, but The Matrix. I mean, at the beginning of the movie, Neo, not even going by Neo, it doesn't even look like he could fight his way out of a paper bag. He has no idea what's going on for practically half the movie, in denial, all the elements of a fish out of water, and by the end of the movie, and obviously the next two, which I didn't enjoy as much, but they're not that bad, we're talking about an absolute superhero. So, that's my entry, I would say, The Matrix. Talk to you later. Bye.
The best fish out of water story? He's actually Ash at the end of Evil Dead 2, when he drops into the medieval world with his like Ford LTD or something, and that's one of the best twists in any movie. And then it's played out in Army of Darkness, which was pretty good too, in a different way. But that ending blew me away. I was like, really gets your imagination going. Like, at the time I was role-playing a lot in the early 90s when I saw that. And Yeah, it gave me lots of ideas.
Hey, Jason, it's BJ. Man, trying to narrow the fish out of water down to one. I'm kind of having a hard time because there are three that I can think of, so I'm going to enter all three of them, and you can just pick which one you consider my official entry. The Three Amigos is a fish out of water, a classic fish out of water, where, you know, of course, they're actors who portray heroes in a movie, and some people mistake them for the real thing, and then they think they're going to shoot a movie, and it turns out they've actually been hired to come in Magnificent Seven style and save the village from the bandits. Great fish out of water comedy. And one that follows a similar theme is a little more recent. Well, it's not a recent movie. It's more recent than Three Amigos. Galaxy Quest. Another, you know, now you've got six fish out of water actors who are involved in, you know, a Star Trek-like show. And, you know, aliens come to take them to help them, thinking that they really are, you know, spacefaring heroes. So those are two, I think, very good comedies that are fish out of water stories. And then the third one I thought of, which is maybe not a fish out of water, but more of a fish thrown back into water after forgetting he's a fish, is Hook, with Robin Williams and Dustin Hoffman, where, you know, Robin Williams is Peter Pan, who left Never Never Land and grew up and forgot who he was, and then has to go back and learn to be a lost boy again, right? So there's three separate entries, or one entry, or, you know, pick which one you think is my entry. But those are some good fish out of water movies that I can think of.
Hey, Jason, this is Blind Geek. This is regarding the fish out of water contest. I have what I consider to be the ultimate in fish out of water, and that would be one of the greatest comedies ever made, bar none, My Cousin Vinny. If you haven't seen it for a while, I highly, highly recommend it. And, yeah, everything about that is fish out of water. From the way he's dressed when you first see him, to all his problems with procedure, and interacting with the judge, it's all there. Total fish out of water. And as far as I'm concerned, like I said, one of the greatest comedies of all time. All right. That's all I have to say. Talk to you soon.
My fish out of water trope that I would go with, I had a real hard time with that, I'll be honest with you. I was going to go with Goon, the hockey movie.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty good.
This next entry was sent on Discord as a text message, so I'll just read it. It's from MW, the World's MW Lewis podcast. My entry is the winner, Thomas Covenant. The Chronicles of Thomas Covenant. Not only was he a fish out of water in the land, he was a fish out of water in earth because of his leprosy.
Hey, Jason, it's Hobbs. I know it's been a minute, but I'm calling in for the Fish Out of Water, Stranger in a Strange Land contest, and I am going to put in the TV series Dark. It aired the first season on 2017 on Netflix, and there's three seasons, and all I'm going to do is read the blurb. When two children go missing in a small German town, its sinful past is exposed, along with the double lives and fractured relationships that exist along four families as they search for the kids. The mystery drama series introduces an intricate puzzle filled with twists that include a web of curious characters, all of whom have a connection to the town's troubled history, whether they know it or not. The story includes supernatural elements that tie back to the same town in 1986. Dark represents the first German original series produced for Netflix. My cousin Hawk turned me on to this. I don't know if I've still seen every episode, but it goes with your imagined or wanted version for the contest as, well, I won't say. I don't want to ruin it for anybody because it's one of those shows that you kind of have to watch and gather what in the F is actually going on. And ruining it is ruining it, if you know what I mean.
Thank you, everyone, for all those wonderful entries. In order, we received entries from Joe of Hindsightless, Daniel of Bandits Keep, Anthony, a.k.a. Runeslinger of Casting Shadows, Michael, a.k.a. Chicago Wiz, from the Dungeon Master's Handbook, Dark Fluid, from The Silver Key, John, from Red Dice Diaries, Carl, from The Geomologist Presents, Decahedron Joe, from the Decahedron RPG Podcast, Nate, Sonny, Sam, BJ, a.k.a. Game Doc, from The Arcane Alienist, The Blind Geek, from Monkeys Took My Jetpack, Jared, who you just recently heard me interview about their new game, Goblin Market, MW, of The Worlds of M.W. Lewis, and last but not least, Jason Hobbs, of Random Screed and Hobbs and Friends. Thank you, everyone, for those entries. I really enjoyed all of them, and I'm so glad that I do my winners by random, because it would be very hard to pick one of those as my favorite. Before I pick some random winners, maybe I should talk about my entry in this contest, and that's going to dovetail into what I'm doing for Scary Movie Month, or Halloween, or October. So what I'm doing this month is I'm concentrating on Washington Irving's story, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, in all of its myriad forms. Now, I'm not going to cover every permutation of the story, but I'm going to go through a bunch of them. And one thing I'm doing is binge watching the 2013 TV series about Sleepy Hollow. And in that, we have Ichabod Crane, who wakes up 200 years later in modern-day America to find that he's tied with the Headless Horseman. The Headless Horseman ends up being Death of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, and teaming up with Abby Mills, a detective of the Sleepy Hollow Police Department, has to try to stave off the apocalypse. In that story, Ichabod Crane is very much a fish out of water. That's not the first fish out of water that comes from Washington Irving, because we also have Rip Van Winkle. But I'll talk more about what I'm watching and reading and playing to celebrate The Legend of Sleepy Hollow this month on future episodes. Without further ado, I want to announce the two winners of the contest. These were rolled randomly in the order they're listed in the show notes. I roll in the bots channel in the Audio Dungeon Discord, so anybody can always go check and see what I rolled. And the winners this time are two folks that have won before. We have Sam and Decahedron Joe. So I'm not sure what they're going to pick. I will reach out and see what prize that they get. Their options are a swag bag from DaveCon, an item from my RPG collection mailed to them on my dime, or a drive-through RPG gift certificate. And I will also reach out to them to verify a charity that we can agree on, and I'll give somebody a charity in both their names. So I'll announce what actual prize they picked and the charity in a future podcast. Before I let you go today, I do have a couple messages sitting in the mailbag, and I want to go ahead and play them so that don't stack up for too long. I don't want messages to sit there for months. So I'm going to go ahead and play these two messages. Well, three messages, actually. Two from Joe from Hindsightless, and one from Minion, also known as Rob, from Confessions of a Wee Timmer Spooshy. First up is Joe.
Hey, Jason, just finished up your Lady Hawk episode, and damn, man, I'm really pleasantly surprised that everyone, for the most part, you know, except for Spencer, everybody really seemed to enjoy the movie, and that makes me happy, because if you couldn't tell from my message, I really like that movie. Dude, I absolutely loved, 1,000,000% loved so many of the comments, but hearing Henchman and his friend Ben that he's had for 40 years get together to watch this movie and record about it. How amazing is that? How amazing is this thing that we've been doing that Henchman started, and it got him together with an old ass friend of his, and they sat down and watched the movie together. When's the last time you watched the movie just you and your buddy? For me, I forever, right? Like, that just made me really happy. It sounded like they had an awesome time. MW's rating system is a genius rating system. I absolutely love it. Fully reclined, fully prone, I should say. Fully prone is a perfect way to rate a movie. I love what Dark Fluid said about the visor scene towards the end of the movie, where we're getting like the first person perspective through Rutger's visor, his helmet visor. I meant to say something about that in my message, because when I was watching it, I was like, what the hell is this? Stop this. This is awful. But yeah, I personally like the movie. I get a lot of people weren't into the music. I'm sorry. I get a lot of people weren't into the music. I really enjoy the music. I thought it fit well, but yeah, it's obviously, you know, that's not for everybody. And that's 100% cool. Yeah, Carl and Amy both talked about boobs, how there was only a side boob, but I just had to point out sometimes side boob is the best boob. And that's all I got to say on that, man. It was an awesome, awesome episode. I think this is the best depiction of the classic, the old school D&D thief we have in films. Is there a better D&D thief, old school D&D thief in movies than Matthew Broderick, than Mouse? Ah, man. I don't know. Maybe somebody can say, but I think it might be the best one. Anyway, that was an awesome episode. Thanks again to Henchman for coming up with the idea, for you for hosting it, and to everybody out there for participating. You guys are great. Everybody's awesome. And have a good night. Peace out.
I feel obligated to say that the views expressed by callers into the Nerds RPG Variety Cast about women's body parts are not necessarily shared by the Nerds RPG Variety Cast. Although, well, I think I better take the fifth on that one. Now, let's move on to the next caller, also about the Lady Hawk episode. This is Rob, also known as Minion.
Hello, Jason. This is Rob, also known as Minion, calling from Confessions of a Wee Timorous Bushy. And I've finished, well, actually I listened to it yesterday, but I finished listening to your podcast and everybody's thoughts and opinions on Lady Hawk. My memory, I haven't seen it for a while, and apologies for not joining the show idea, but my memory is that it was indeed quite a ponderous movie in places, but had a few great moments. So really interesting. I must try and get hold of a copy somewhere and watching it just for old time's sake. As for Beastmaster, I'll try and track down a copy so maybe I can join you guys next time. But until then, or until you do Conan the Barbarian, chill out and take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for those kind words. You know, I am really humbled by the feedback we get to these episodes. Goblin's Henchman proposed this originally as a way to share movies together and to make it accessible for people that have to get physical copies of the movies and watch because they don't have streaming services and whatnot available to them. And we've been, like I say, very lucky that we've had participants all over the world. But the complication is we have participants all over the world. So it's hard to pick movies that are going to be available in every market. Hopefully you can find a copy of Beastmaster. I really do think it's a staple of the 1980s B-movie sword and sorcery fantasy genre. And a pretty interesting example of that as well. Now our next caller should be a voice recognizable to everyone who's listened to this podcast.
Hey, Jason, that was an awesome interview you did with the dude that made Goblin Goblin Market. That game sounds awesome, man. I think I would get a real, real kick out of that game. But yeah, if he wants to put out a text only version, sign me up, man. I don't need art in my RPGs because I can't see it. But give me a text only copy all day long, man. I would eat that stuff up. But anyway, yeah, I just wanted to say that game sounds wild and fun, dude. So yeah, great stuff, man. Take it easy. Peace out.
And remember, folks, if you sent a call in to Jason and you haven't heard it on this episode, have no fear. It will appear.
Colin, thank you for that reminder. That, of course, everybody, is Colin Green of the Spike Pit RPG Podcast. To answer Joe's comment, yeah, I had a lot of fun talking with Jared. I think Goblin Market is a very interesting design, and I hope to have Jared back on when we do a panel discussion on adventure design. Watch for that later this year, maybe early next year. I talked with Jared another 30, maybe 45 minutes after we finished recording, and it was one of those conversations we really should have left the record button on because we had a lot of fun, and it was a wide-ranging discussion on a variety of topics, but you know, that always seems to happen when you're talking to somebody and you're like, darn, we should have kept recording that. Anyhow, I really appreciate everybody that entered the contest, everybody that sent those entries in. You're all winners. I want to thank our callers today, and I want to thank everybody that listens, that, you know, even if you don't call, just the fact you're tuning in and enjoying the content, I appreciate that. If you have any thoughts about anything you've heard today or any other podcast, you can reach out to me, or if you have thoughts about something you haven't heard on here that you want to hear, you can reach out to me. All the ways to reach me are in the show notes, so please do not hesitate to reach out. I love getting listener feedback. I want to thank TJ Drannan for the wonderful music, Ray Otis for the coffee cup clip art, and until I talk to you next time, be excellent to each other.
Joke about your spouse, but the operator's screaming it's coming from inside the house. What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? Well, the audience is pretty sure he took a pretty head, and the only question left is if the fiddle shoot him dead. Bring on the gold, bring on the gold. Butcher is a dice man and your moil is by the tipper, and I'm assuming that your partner back there in the wood chipper. Don't look away, don't look away, don't look away, don't look away. Well, the zombies are arising and the world has gone to heck. We're living for the dying and we're dying for the train wreck.